Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen, Ryan Elke, Anthony Bellino, all joining you. Joining us now, he is the program director and an anchor for BCSN, one of our television affiliates. His name's Justin Feldkamp. You can find him on Twitter at Justin Feldkamp. He was covering the Mid-American Conference Media Day yesterday. And Justin, my man, first and foremost, good morning to you. Thank you for taking the time to join us. How are you? How are the kids? How's the life? You know, how's everything going?
It's great. I always love that fake applause. Thank you very much, Polina. We are doing great. Yes.
Father of four, ladies and gentlemen, and he's doing radio. Like, come on. I mean, the guy's got, like, you know, he's tying shoes. He's putting, you know, kids' clothes on, trying to shuffle them out the door right now. You deserve all the applause in the world, as well as all the parents listening out there, because they understand your struggle. I have no idea what you're going through, but I hear it's tough.
It's great, dude. Just last night, we were rocking and rolling baseball drills, gymnastics, get done with gymnastics. Dad, can we go to Mr. Freeze? So we hit up the local ice cream shop here in the Toledo area. Get home, got to do a bed and bath, brush teeth, snacks, all that, you know how it goes. And it was fantastic, and we're plugging along, and summer fun is here.
You said you know how it goes. I have no idea how that goes.
Well,
because
I mean, you know how it goes because I've been telling you for 5 years how it's going on.
This is true, yes. You know, when it's like, hey, do I want Mr. Freeze or any ice cream? Then I'll just go get it. Am I going to go to Detroit tonight? I'll just go. And I don't have any small humans to worry about. So it makes things a little bit easier. But as far as the Mid-American Conference Media Days yesterday, hosted at Ford Field, as it is usually, you know, the media came out with their predictions. Coaches speak, players speak, and sometimes the players speak and coaches speak, which is always kind of interesting. But the commish spoke as well, and he had some very, very interesting things to say.
Yeah, it was somewhat interesting in the sense that, you know, in general, most of the time when you're at these preseason media extravaganzas for any conference, whether it's MAC, Big Ten, SEC, ACC, what have you, it's in general like an annual State of the Union. Most of the time it's kind of patting, not necessarily themselves, but patting the conference on the back as far as the recognition, the awards, the individual teams, or the actual individuals who have some type of outstanding recognition that needs to be recognized. And John Steinbrecher did that, but he also took some shots at the NCAA, and that was kind of, you know, somewhat surprising, but he has his annual podium speak, and he definitely took advantage of it.
Well, yeah, give us the deets, man. What was he, you know, I know that, you know, he was very adamant in pushing for the opportunity to, you know, expand the college football playoff, which I think every group of five commissioner and every group of five coach and anybody who plays in the group of five is finally, you know, pounding. We've done it enough, pounding our fists on the table, talking about, hey, if you're going to say there's 130 plus FBS teams, why not open this thing? Why not make, you know, the college football playoff a goal that is realistic for all? If you win your conference championship, how come you don't get a seat at the table like they do in the men's and women's basketball tournaments in the great theater that is the Cinderella story? And I get told all the time, you know, hey, you're nuts. No group of five teams ever going to win. I point back to the 2006, 2007, one of those years. Boise State beating Oklahoma in the Statue of Liberty game, right? Oklahoma was supposed to roll. Big game Bob, right? Bob Stoops. But here goes Boise State in one of the greatest college football games that was ever played because of the theatrics. You had the guy who scores the winning touchdown proposes to his cheerleader girlfriend. Something right out of a movie. And it was great theater. We need that opportunity in the college football playoff.
I tell you what, that it's somewhat funny you bring that up because all those little details, so many people can recall those details because that was a game, if you were watching, you remember where you were kind of thing. So I do believe that there is some type of magic that at least is created with those opportunities. And you and I have kind of gone head to head in this battle of expanding the playoff. And I was in the camp of keep it at four because it keeps every Saturday in the regular season important. And I still believe that it is the case, but I have kind of moved the needle personally because I've seen Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State over and over and over again. And I think whenever there's something new, there's some unforeseen circumstances that you just don't know or can't predict. And the problem that I have with the current playoff is it just seems like the rich get richer, and at some point you just get tired. And I think they've seen that in the TV ratings a little bit. And I think you kind of got to throw out last year because of the COVID and all that. But at the same time, I do think that, yes, what John Steinbrecher was talking about yesterday at Ford Field is, you know, more inclusive, fairer, and it can still bring that increased importance and relevancy, is what he's quoted as saying, to the regular season and the conference championship games, because it's going to include those teams that are in the, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, maybe up into the, you know, mid-20s type of slots when they're trying to get into that top 12 to have a shot.
You know, and Justin, I'm one of the people that believes, you know, midweek action was all fine and dandy when it was the only show in town. And now you have conferences all over the map with all the different, you know, conference contracts that they have. No matter what the network, you know, might be, it just feels like there's college football on every day of the week. So the MAC is no longer the midweek, you know, only show in town. Throw in Thursday night football, you had the Big Ten moving to Fridays, which I think is an absolute travesty. You should not encroach on high school football's football's night, but that's just me. And the Big Ten is going to do what the Big Ten is going to do to get more eyeballs on their network for Friday evenings. But I will say this, if you have an opportunity to catch a midweek action game that kicks off at 8 o'clock, and let's say it's between, you know, Toledo and Eastern Michigan, and you know that the winner of that game, you know, moves and improves in their standing for a conference championship game, which could eventually lead to a college football playoff berth, for me, it makes that individual game that much more important in the regular season, where outside of degenerate gamblers, you know, the viewership might not be that great. And also, not only the increased importance on that individual game, but it could perhaps maybe adjust some of the recruiting a little bit. You might be able to draw a recruit who might be kind of a tweener that might have to, you know, wait some time to play at Ohio State, but might be able to get on the field a little bit quicker at a MAC school.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the future, and kind of figuring out what different challenges this could, and how it could impact with a 12-team expanded playoff, and how it impacts the Power Five schools, and how it impacts the Group of Five. And, you know, we've seen it with this allowance of transferring. The drawback for teams in the MAC is, okay, you have a solid running back or quarterback, and they play really, really well, first team All MAC, or Player of the Year. They have the more ease to transfer, and they're poached by a Power 5 deal. But at the flip side, you have the opportunities where you have what you're talking about, the tweener, where out of high school they thought they'd go in and they'd be the big man on campus and play right away. Well, that wasn't the reality. And they're good. They're Power 5 type of quality, but maybe they're second or third string. And then they have the opportunity to transfer to a MAC school. And there's been plenty of MAC schools just this past offseason in which that's happened. So I think that it kind of plays both ways a little bit. But getting back to what you were talking about, how, you know, opportunity to have the MAC in the maxing situation, and having the different players kind of figure out where they fit in, I think there's benefits to both sides. But I'll tell you this, Anthony, Maxion ain't going away anytime soon. Steinbrecher made note of it yesterday, saying that we have 5 more years really on our ESPN deal and our current TV contract. So it's here to stay. When I've talked to athletic directors over the years on this topic, they're generally saying that it's great exposure for not only the football program, but the university at large. The presidents of these universities love the television exposure, and they see the TV ratings, and they see the digital impressions that they're getting across the board when it comes to social media and everything else, where, yes, you are correct in saying that the MAC is not the only horse in town when it comes to midweek November college football. But at the same time, they're kind of getting bang for their buck, so to speak. And then the concession stands losses that they have by having a chilly November night game on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, and not having a full crowd on a Saturday, they're kind of, you know, give and take, and they're okay with the give and take right now.
And one of the biggest things for me in the midweek games is the fact that there have been certain instances, and I can recall a good friend of ours, Jason Candle, down there at the University of Toledo, where they have expressed the difficulty of trying to play three games in 18 days. And it was always, you could almost bank on it, the team that was on the short week going on the road to play the midweek game was going to lose. It's just the way that it was. And the MAC has done a much better job of scheduling and trying to, you know, break that up so that there's more of a consistent break for these student athletes. Because, you know, we talk about health and safety all the time, except for when it's an inconvenience in the pocketbooks. Justin Feldkamp joining us right now. He is the program director and anchor for BCSN Sports, one of our television simulcast partners. And, you know, Justin, it was interesting. You know, it seems like Commissioner Steinbrecher was also kind of frustrated with the changes in name, image, and likeness. And I think that his frustration would be echoed by a lot of us. And, you know, we want to see the kids have an opportunity. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But it would be nice to have a little direction on how this whole thing is going to work.
Yeah, across the board legislation or across the board standards, across the board guidance is what Steinbrecher was talking about. He says that it seems like it was kind of rushed, began with the state of California passing the legislation to allow student athletes to profit off their name, image, and likeness and branding. And the NCAA could have gone up against it in the legal challenge, but that didn't happen. Then the other option could have been recreating or creating their own name, image, and likeness guidelines. And he said that that was not accomplished. So they are kind of stuck in a situation. And we're just talking about the Power Fives and the Group of Five. So already there's kind of a tiered system within college football. And although name, image, and likeness applies to everybody, not just football, but there's little direction. And he said the NCAA needs to get on track, and saying that going to figure out and changing and adapting. And he just says that in many ways, essentially, the NCAA is stuck in the past, not evolving with the times, not adjusting rules, not modernizing is the word that he used. So he thinks that there needs to be either changes with titles and leaders within the NCAA, or that those current leaders need to kind of wake up and smell the coffee and get things going in the right direction, where there's some type of, okay, well, when this happens, this rule's in place. And there are some of those rules that are in place when it comes to name, image, and likeness, but it seems like there's more questions than answers right now, at least from the MAC commissioner's perspective.
I always say, Justin, my friend, when they gave up the TV rights to control everything that was going on, that's when they lost the power. When you have your own conferences, and in some cases like the Longhorn Sports Network, when you have your own television networks and your own deals and everybody's wheeling and dealing on their own, you've lost total control. It's basically anarchy. It'd be like if the NFC North had their own deal and the AFC South had their own deal. You know, it's just like, come on, with no salary cap. It's like, what exactly are we doing? On the field now, were you surprised the media picked Ball State to win the West, Kent State to win the East? Were you surprised? I mean, Toledo there picked second. They got 7 first place votes. They fell 10 points shy to be the preseason media MAC champion, which doesn't mean anything. I know that they're just going to use that as fuel for the fire. But 5 years of having the best class in the MAC, is this the year that, much like 2017, the Rockets are able to take home the crown?
I'd say there's a legitimate chance, definitely. And honestly, you know, you wait to possibly the end of the season, but based on the schedule and how it plays out, September 25th, the first MAC game of the year for UT, the Toledo Rockets, is at Ball State. So based on preseason predictions, which sometimes pan out correctly and other times do not, but it's going to be decided on the field early on in the conference portion of the season for both teams. But yeah, I'd say that Toledo and the defense, you know, usually we're talking about high-flying, prolific, NFL-bound offensive position players for Toledo, but that is the case. But in addition to that, their defense totally turned it around last year, albeit in a small sample size. But I was talking to some of the players with the Rockets yesterday, and Vince Karras, the players love this guy, newly hired defensive coordinator. It was, in his estimation, one of the players I spoke to, was a much-needed change, because not necessarily only X's and O's and schemes and all that, but more of just like, hey, kind of let the players breathe and let the players be college kids, let these players have fun, not get in here to the film room and get your head and your pencil and your paper down and pay attention to these films, and that's the only thing that matters. No. Hey, developing that chemistry, developing that rapport with the players and wanting to go play not only for your fellow teammate, but for your coach, because there's an understanding, a level of respect, and just kind of that camaraderie with the player-coach relationship. So, and that led to results. Like, it's one thing to have that. That's great, but it that new change led to results on the field. Their defense was much better. But I think the biggest question mark with Toledo as compared to Ball State is they need health. I mean, the last few years, ever since Logan Woodside lit the MAC on fire and broke all kinds of Toledo records and then went to the NFL, still playing in the NFL, they've had injuries. They've had Mitch Guadagni. They've had Eli Peters. All of them have had injuries. Last year, Carter Bradley showed some glimpses of success in the quarterback position, but he also showed glimpses of struggles. So it appears that Carter Bradley is going to be the guy, or at least it's his job to lose. There's some other options that Toledo has, but I think it's fair to have them right now. If you told me that they were the mediocre coach's pick at number one in the West or number two, I'd be understanding of each.
Western Michigan finished third in the coaches poll, Central fourth, Eastern fifth, and Northern Illinois sixth on the west side. On the east side, Kent State one, Ohio two, Miami three, Buffalo four, Akron five, and Bowling Green at six. He is Justin Feldkamp. He was there at Ford Field yesterday covering the Mid-American Conference Media Day. Justin, my friend, thank you so much for your time. We greatly appreciate it. Back to the kiddos, back to being dad before you got to go back to work. I don't know how you do it, but man, thank you so much for your time, man. We greatly appreciate it.
I appreciate the invitation, Bellino, and we appreciate the television radio partnership with BCSN and X's and Bros in the Morning.